I'd like to call the meeting of the Shore Acres City Council to order Monday, January 10th at 7:01 p.m. First item on the agenda is roll call.
Councilmember Second. Nancy Chanel, present.
Daniel Wiggins, present.
Jerry Baker, present. Richard Adams, present.
Dolly Aarons, present. Next item on the agenda is Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Thank you. Would everybody please silence their phones? Thank you for coming tonight. The next item on the agenda is citizens' comments. Patrick, you're on the agenda. Public relations with the Port of Houston Authority. Would you please come up here?
Patrick Stanton, 128 City Lawn. I've got about three things I'd like to discuss. First off, I'd like to thank the council, the mayor, and the city administrator for your service last year. It was a tough time to get people to do what they ought to do, and yet be liberal in your thinking and give them a second chance. So I think you did a bang up job. I'd like to thank you.
Thank you.
Secondly, we had a former member of council that passed away, Mr. Schaefer. And normally, whenever a former member of the council or the mayor passed away, usually the council would try to attend the funeral or the mayor. I don't think that happened in this case because it just wasn't widely known that he had passed away. So I'd like for you to consider maybe planting a tree somewhere for Mr. Schaefer. He was a council member on two separate occasions, and he was elderly in the last time, but he cared a lot about this community, and I think we ought to honor him with planting a tree. We've lost quite a few trees, so I think that might be a good idea to do in the future. Okay, the last thing that I wanted to talk about was public relations with the Port of Houston. Several things have happened recently that affect the Port. First off, I'd like to pass out on the Port's homepage what public relations is responsible for. If you would take one of these and just pass it down. And I've highlighted a couple areas. Director of Public Affairs for the Port of Houston resigned, Argentine James, and I think this would be a good time to open up some communication with that department and try to build a better bridge between the port and the city of Shore Acres. There's been missed opportunities from the port. They have done some things. They donated the fireworks for the 4th of July. They had an open house that we all attended to get to know a little bit about the port. So they have done some things. Two of the things that you'll see in the handout was involvement, public relations should be involved in the community, and they should have employee volunteerism. And I think it would be a good time, in my opinion, to be proactive with the port and try to get them to get along better with us, to do some things for us and with us. As an example, when Ike came, we could have used a lot of help. And as far as the port's concerned, we didn't get any. I didn't see any volunteers from the port, but I did see other groups come in. This was a good opportunity for them to build a bridge with the community that I think they missed. They have a facility over here that's really just not doing anything at this time, the cruise terminal. I think we could do something there with the communities, not only us, but the board as well. So we're kind of at a point with the port, and things are happening pretty rapidly, and I think they're going to move pretty fast from now on. I saw in the paper Saturday where Bosco has announced their intent to construct a 7.8 million barrel black oil terminal. Black oil is utilized for bunker fuel. I think they're looking ahead, and you know they're going to satisfy the ships that come in. Port Houston recently raised their tax rate. And the reason that was given in the paper was to service the bond, which originally we were told that wouldn't be necessary, but it is. Another thing that's happened, we've got warehouses all over the place. And it seems like we've got a motel opening up about once a month. We just recently have another one, Express 8, right over here on 146. So things are going to be happening pretty fast. When the Panama Canal gets widened, which I think they're working on it right now, I think we're going to see a big increase in the number of ships. We're also going to see a big increase in the size of ships. There will be a battle about the depth of the Houston Ship Channel. There was before. They agreed not to go over 45 feet in depth because it would change. Some people feel like it would change the environment as far as fishing and so forth. Well, when these big ships come in from Panama, they're going to want to dredge the channel deeper. I think they've already dredged Bayport over here, 50 foot. So it's coming down the pike. So what are our options about what's facing us? We can do nothing. We can fight each threat to our lifestyle as it occurs, or we can try to get involved in the planning of the different things that's going to be coming up in the future. Well, one thing, I've mentioned this before, and I mentioned it when the gentleman gave the Dog and Pony Show from the Port Alliance over here, was the Bill of Rights. You can take one of those and pass it down. This is something that they originated out in California. Granted, this isn't California. Let's see. Here's another. I got a couple more. Excuse me. There's another one there. I think I have one for each. Perfect. I've mentioned this before. The Port Community's Bill of Rights. I think the preamble could use a little work. But the different articles are right on about things that we should expect as a community. So I would like for you as a group to look at this before the next meeting and decide whether you would like to adopt this Bill of Rights, use it as a guide, or none of the above, you know, or tweak it, But I think at the very least, it has some areas in here that everyone would be interested in as far as maintaining a good quality of life. So I ask each of you to take a look at this before the next meeting, and then maybe we could add it to the agenda and discuss it whether you wanted to go forward with this or not. You know, I'm not real fond of everything that goes on in La La Land. I'm kind of a conservative, I think they really come up with something good here. And it's a good guide, if nothing else, for things that we're going to be facing in the future. Thank you.
Patrick, before you leave, I need a clarification on something you mentioned regarding the dredging. If they dredge anymore, is this going to have an impact on our fishing pier out here?
Well,
or our ability to fish, or if anybody else
knows? Well, I think the fisher, the people that are involved in the fishing industry especially, they were quite upset. Yes. And that the shrimp and so forth, they had different arguments. But there was a, you know, there was a royal battle about this about 10, 15 years ago. And the compromise at that time was 45 feet, I think, that allowed to go. But it's going to come up again. And how this will affect us, I don't know.
I don't know, but I'm thinking maybe the fishing industry will have to deal with that issue.
Well,
I don't know how that's going to affect
San Diego. San Diego has some issues. The fault is that the channel gets deep in some areas, you start changing around current and erosion in the bay, and so that affected the environment.
So that has been affected
to
the
environment. The strip channel is already widened substantially and deepened to 45 feet. And one of the concerns is, as I already mentioned, will change the salinity of the bay. You'll get more salt water, probably get more saltwater fish, but it may also cause problems with the where those little critters are raised, marshlands and so forth.
And I'm for approaching the port myself, I'm talking about the future, and try to get involved in these things before they happen. At least get our input instead of always having to react to things. That's it. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
Are they going to be dredging over Morgan's
Point? I have no idea.
I mean, seems like all the activity is headed towards Bayport, you know, as through our neighbors. But I'm also interested to find out is the equal dredging and expansion also going to apply to Morgan's Point. And the reason I'm bringing this up was the many times that I've passed over the Grand Harlem Bridge, I look over there, I really have not seen that many cranes very active over there. And I'm just kind of curious if there's going to be a balance between Bayport and Morgan's Point, or are we going to be on the heavy end?
Well, that's all the more reason to approach them from the public relations aspect and be right out, be up front with it. You know, if we're involved in the planning, then we've got an idea of what we've got to deal with. And the way it is now, things just happen, you know, and we react. Howard?
I've got a couple comments basically about the same thing you do.
Okay, well, before you do that, Shane, do you have any answers?
Just to answer a few questions, yeah, I mean, I know that we do have a volunteer group and we would love to be involved. We actually are looking for ways to do it, so that's part of the reason I try to come out here, not just to listen to what is said on the board, and I really do want to figure out how we can use, we're building up our employee volunteer system. It's not as strong as it used to be, but we're rebuilding it, so we'd love to work in that way. I know that for sure. As far as dredging goes, right now we are where we need to be for Bayport. Things could change in the future, I don't know, but we built it out to the depth that we wanted when we wanted it to be fully built, so shouldn't go a whole lot deeper. That would take federal action, so we're not ready to go in that battle right now, in the near future for sure, and we don't have that in a strategic plan anywhere. And for Barber's Cut, it has had some dredging recently. The plan for Barber's Cut is to retrofit it. It's obviously our oldest terminal, one that we've used a lot. We want to make sure that it's up to par when we are, when the economy recovers and we're fully working here and at Barber's Cut. So we're not, our plan is not to make Bayport the main port and kind of leave Barber's Cut out. Our plan is to have them both going full. So there will be, if you look recently, we have just approved money to spend to retrofit some of the stuff in Barber's Cut, because like anything else, it's old and got to renew some of the docks and some of the stuff like that. So it's not going away, and we're not focusing just on Bayport. They're definitely going to be spearheaded at the same time. So.
What's the next batch of cranes coming in at Bayport?
Right now, where we're at right now, there we don't have a date because we're not fully, as you probably see. I mean, we're busy. Which I know some of y'all aren't happy about, obviously, but we're not as busy as we could be, so we don't have a plan to bring them in. We're kind of going as it goes.
Is there any talk at all about trying to install facilities so that ships come into coal iron and that could plug into shore power?
We have heard the idea. We know that there's one place that does do it in California right now. It's not, we don't have the capability of it right now because as it goes in business, I guess we could force, and this is me talking, this isn't a strategic plan or anything, just being frank with y'all. We could force customers to do cold ironing and they would probably go somewhere else right now. And that's kind of where it is right now. We're talking about it. We're more working on our initiative with the gas change right now than we've been forced to do. So, and that's just. Right thing. I don't, I'm not in all the operations, and I would love to point you off to someone who would give you the exact perfect answer. So that's kind of my role here. Is I'm a community relations, government relations guy. I know what the regulations are, and I know what our outreach initiatives are, and I can give you all, I can come back to the next council meeting with the exact statement. I know our environmental team has looked into it. I know they continue to look into it. Not something that we've said no to, and it's not something that we're going to send a check tomorrow to start doing. So, that's just.
Are you going to stick around for the rest of the meeting? Because I have information that I want to convey.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah,
I thought your comments were very timely. Howard, you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah. Howard Dolph, I live in Bayward. Concerning the dredging, the port, at least in the past, the port did a deal with the Army Corps of Engineers. The Army Corps of Engineers would set up a contract with a company to do the amount of dredging. Anything that the port wanted to do, they would then approach the same company and say, hey, you got your stuff here, you're here already, cut us a deal to do what we want you to do. So that's how the port go about getting the dredging that it wanted to accomplish. Basically, going for the least expenditure. Also on expenditures, when Argentina left, I heard that she's opening her own private business. You may want to check into the $370-some-odd thousand severance package. In a time of economic crisis, when somebody says, I want to quit, I want to leave, $378,000 seems kind of high. Going back to the employee volunteerism, some of the folks here on council may remember that 8 years ago, 7 years ago, we had a home that was in pretty sad shape. Several of the citizens here wanted to do something to rebuild it. The port came through unofficially, donated or twisted the arm of their contractor. The cement that was used for the foundation was the same hardness or same quality as what was used over in Bayport. Many of the other companies, some local here, helped with the redesign and whatever, but the port did come through with their volunteerism on that. And years ago, I also got my feet pretty well wet planting salt grass or whatever it was that the port did. So in the past, I've been real good about volunteer efforts. I haven't been involved with anything recently or heard of anything recently, but they did a bang-up job. One of the people that was associated with the, one of the contractors there at Bayport Container put in many, many hours on his own. Basically, he became a foreman of his project. And it was way over and above any commitment that he had to the port or to his company. But he just felt out of his heart that he wanted to help the citizens here, as many of us did. Wasn't planning on mentioning any of it until Patrick spoke.
Thank you.
Yep.
Anybody else wish to address council? Anita.
Excuse me. 2011, we had started having our regular CAC meetings and also our CCAP meetings. And last Tuesday, we had our first CAC meeting of the year. And we had a terrific turnout. We meet out at the DuPont Recreation Center. Basically, we covered a lot of bases, and I don't really want to bore you with a lot of like safety reports because of the fact that pretty much our agenda for every meeting. But one of the things that I did want to bring up was, and I don't know how many of you have heard, and these were limited printouts because they weren't limited on purpose, but the turnout was so big that they didn't plan on that. But it's highlights of the La Porte Safety Town. Have you all heard anything about that? I'm not for sure where it's going to go. There was no one there to highlight the location of it, but it looks interesting. It's something that they're wanting to have a safe place for the children to go. Summer team volunteer programs, Halloween, Safety Town, Family Friday Night, and so on. So I only have two. You're welcome to pass these around if you'd like. And if I find out any more information about it, I'll be glad to pass it on to you. This is planning in advance, way in advance. April the 9th, which is on a Saturday, the port is having La Porte, Morgan's Point, Shore Acres, Household Hazardous Waste Collection Day.
What was that, April?
9th. And where you have to go to take your hazardous waste is on 23rd Street. Y'all know where that's at. They will be collecting different things like brake fluid batteries, pool chemicals, electronic waste. But they're asking for each vehicle to limit 5 on the electronic part of it, which includes the monitors, TVs up to 27 inches, CPUs, the keyboards, printers, cellular phones, white goods such as refrigerator stove, washing machine, a water heater, tires up to 20 inches off the rim, a limit of 6, a flammable corrosive propane cylinders up to 5 gallons. What you can't bring is hazardous waste and electronic waste from business, explosives, ammunition, or radioactive materials, trash, fire extinguishers, or controlled substances.
Could that be sponsored by LaPorte?
Yes, LEPC. And yes. And I'm glad you brought that up. Here is the basic rules. They're only going to accept 350 vehicles for hazardous waste. And how this works is, we're included in this, and there's no charge for pickup. If Richard is got some monitors and Dana's got pain center batteries, collectively you can put that all in one vehicle and take it in. But they're only going to allow 350 vehicles. So that doesn't mean 350 households, that's 350 vehicles. So maybe collectively in Shore Acres, if we have maybe a mini program going where we can get the word out. Because we don't want one vehicle to go over there with just a plastic bag full of AAA batteries, if you know what I'm saying. So collectively, you know, we can make a real dent in it. So here, and this was limited too because of the size of our meeting, so.
Are you going to discuss this again at your meeting? Do you know? Well, it's before April, you probably will.
It's April, yeah.
Can you find out about if they're going to accept the fluorescent light bulbs?
I can ask.
Could you do that for us? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, the mercury based, I believe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I wanted to bring up was program planning for this year. So we spent quite a bit of time. We did our sticky dots. We had about 12 different topics that are on the agenda that we voted on for program planning, so I haven't heard the results of that. And I don't know if you all know how sticky dots work, but it kind of works like you get this sleeve of sticky dots, and then each item for program planning, everybody gets a sleeve of sticky dots, and you just go around dots where on the topics you want to see brought up in program planning for this year, and the one that gets the most dots, because we have seven meetings left for this year, then that is a fair way to do it. So it's sort of worse like the price ones, I guess, because we've got a lot of comments. But I haven't heard the results of that yet. But one of the things that I did bring up was truck washing stations, and it seemed to raise a lot of eyebrows, so probably going to be getting some attention. Thank you.
Thanks, Anita. Does anybody else wish to address council? Joe?
I have one quick comment. Yes. Just FYI, post Turkey and I, the Boy Houston Volunteers came out on our first barbecue cook-off day and manned the pod the entire day while we were all part of that. That's one of their volunteer efforts, right?
Thank you. Okay, any other comments? Yes. I'd appreciate it so we can get you on recording.
I'm Linda's favorite.
What's your address?
615 Bayway.
615 Bayway.
I wanted to talk a little bit about drainage and the issue of the I know that I've had a call from the work site a couple of times, and they're very good about coming out really fast. They tested the pressure at my house and have found that there's nothing wrong. But I do have a problem with the sewage stuff coming out of my shower stall and drain. I've been told by my plumber, who is the inspector at my house, put in all new plumbing in my house. It's not the problem of my plumbing, but all the I think it's all the way down to great. And he's come out to auger the line all the way through, and he has found that there is a break in the line, but it looks to be somewhere between the easement and the middle of the street. But he talked about that before, and he said that it was going to be my expense. But I don't think that's something we really need to talk about, because I can't shut down the main, the city main for repairs in the middle of the street, and that's a heavy thing to have to stand the price of tearing up our city street right in front of somebody's house and then having to fix it and put it on back together. That's something we really need to talk about. It is a causing a problem, and I don't know if that's what's making my dish so full of water. I don't know. The water in the ditch is a problem. If it all is related to the same thing, we need to find out. And I would really like it if we could actually come out and look at it and talk to you about it. You know, let's do something. At least put it on the books, something. That is a problem. It collects mosquitoes and all the larvae. It's full of weeds. It doesn't flow at all. So whether it's a slope issue, possibly it's just that we need to have some guys go in there and find out if there's a blockage somewhere. Who knows? It could be just really simple, very cheap. Who knows? But it collects the larvae and mosquitoes, which is a problem for all of us. You know, and all of those snakes are in there. You know, the herons come down. I've tried to throw in donuts to kill the mosquitoes. That doesn't work. I've tried to put in bleach. That doesn't keep them so long. Darlene, my neighbor across the street, sprays it. I've even thrown in some fish to try and just keep control of all the mosquitoes. But, you know, I have to completely spray down just to go outside, you know, enjoy my day. That's cool. The dogs go down there to drink, so that's a problem for their health. I can't mow it because it's very steep, and the bottom of it is just like quicksand. I've gone in there to try and get the trash that people throw in there out of that water, but I, you know, I've lost a boot in there, you know, rubber boot. So it's dangerous. You know, anybody could fall. A child could fall in there. It would be a serious issue, and I'd really like it if that could be fixed before it really is a problem. It is a flooding hazard because on the 29th, when we got all the rains right before New Year's Eve, you know, I've gotten a new driveway. I recently poured a new patio in the back of my house to control the flooding problem into my house. And I thought flower beds all around it to soak up water or whatever. I have a French drain that was built into the side of my, between my house and the driveway to control the flow of the water. The French drain goes underneath my driveway and goes into the ditch. The ditch was so full during all of that time that the water was coming back and flooded, you know, from all of my patio. I had about 7 inches of water all the way up my driveway and into the back, and the flower bed standing water back there. So that does pose a problem. I think, you know, it's just something I'd really like if we could just get this on the books. Let's talk about it. Let's don't just, you know, pat me on the head, ignore it. Then we'll get to it once we start doing it. Is there something that y'all can tell me that we've already talked about?
Yeah, I can address a few of those things. I know that our utility folks have been perplexed by the pressure issue, and they tell me that every time they go out that they find normal flow and normal pressure. We have started about a month ago or so a new complaint tracking, internal tracking, that illuminates issues that are repetitive, and your issue from you and some of your neighbors has come to the top of the heap as a result of that, which causes us to go back and look and see if there is some other issue, because what I was hearing was that the valves, the service was turned off or down on someone's house. I don't know if that was yours or one of the others, you know, and various things. But, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. If you have that many people on just two, there's two different lines. Yours is one of them that's now come to light with this. There clearly is a problem, even if they don't understand what the problem is. So we have pulled our drawings, and what we've discovered is we don't believe that there's an adequate loop on the line, which is to say that flow and pressure is affected by two different things. One is the size of the line that feeds it and how many feed points there are. And so without necessarily changing the size of your pipe, if water is fed to it from more than one end, in essence, on a loop system, it has an impact. Turns out that when a fire hydrant was installed at the corner of Baywood and Byway, that one of the loop lines was disconnected because it was in bad shape. It was not reconnected. So we're having the city engineer evaluate that line, and we're going to improve the loop on that line, which will improve the flow. You know, the pressure drops as the flow exceeds the curve. But needless to say, we're looking at that, and we are going to do that in the short term. I expect that's something that we can accomplish in the next 30 to 40 days of getting a new line installed to boost the pressure on Baywood. So in terms of water pressure, I hope that provides you with some relief. We are having the engineer to look at it to see what long term, if the line is undersized, we need to know that, if, you know, so we at least know where we're going. But the loop is coming, the extra tie-in. On the water in the ditch, I have been out there several times. I've been out there when it's been dry. Certainly it holds water. I've been out there when it was wet. I went out there in the middle of those rains. It was really coming down that day. Actually, I have a graphic for you here as well. You can see the green is one of the tributaries to Taylor Bayou that is Harris County Flood Control District. And at the north end of that, where it crosses Short Acres Boulevard, that's where the county stops. And as part of our community development block grant, we're going to be improving across from Short Acres to Seagrove in that ditch line. And then the culvert work that we have scheduled on that are these red lines. And you can see we have Baywood. There was ditch work done on the east end when the road was worked on, and there was some done in the middle, and this will effectively take that drainage all the way back down to old 146, and it goes back into that first a TxDOT ditch and then the Harris County ditch. And that's on the program of work. And one of the issues that we have with the Texas Community Development Block Grant is that we're prohibited, as just like the people have found with the Harris County Recoverers that can't do any work on their houses and still be in the program, we can't work on those areas and stay in the program to get the funding to do that. But we're very optimistic that that work will start in March or April. They're past the 60% on the engineering. The environmental work has already been performed where those red bars are at and the green bars that are ours. So they've been out, the environmental contractor has done the 600 block of Baywood, those ditches, which is a preparatory thing. The yellow that you see there, those are new streets. And with all the new street work, drainage is included. So just as an explanation of what that yellow is up there on Oakdale, to get the drainage around that area. So we have things coming on with the drainage. Now, when those ditches go over top of bank, there's a couple of things that happen there, and it's one of the problems that we've had the engineers looking at and exploring the issues with our ditches, and Mr. Shack, who's been here many, many times about flooding the corner of Oakdale and Park, what they find is that our ditch flooding, or our ditch drainage, is only good to basically the top of the crown of the street. That the expectation is that we'll take water to the crown of the street. The adjacent property, as Mr. Shack's was, is actually a few inches lower than the crown of the street. There's nothing we can do with ditches to affect his drainage. And that's what the engineers came back and said, that we couldn't provide him any relief with the ditch system there if his property is going to be below the crown of the street. Now, and that's why we were unable to do any work in that particular section to provide him some immediate relief with that. So we are so flat and so low, there are going to be times when our ditches, the best they can do is fill to the top of the ditch and flow. That's not to say there aren't obstructions and other issues there. We can, and we have on Oakdale, and I will double check and make sure we've done that on Baywood, and Jet Line, where there's culverts. And there's a large number of, and I think right next door to you, where your neighbor has got that run, it's a long run, as a matter of fact, that's in a culvert pipe, so there's no open ditch.
It's over 200 feet, and the last time it was jetted, all it did was flow out the manhole between the release valve and the old street, but did not progress further toward the street.
Now, you're talking stormwater or wastewater? Because there is no stormwater.
I thought you were there. Yeah. That's my husband.
Right now I'm on storm drainage, and so we'll look again at those culvert pipes and make sure that there aren't any obstructions in there. That won't interfere with our grant, and I will re-double check to make sure that we, if we haven't, then we will, and we'll clear that out.
With
him,
I was here when we first started talking about it.
One question, this, your plumber checked out your plumber, right? Said everything's fine and your sewer line.
I haven't got the sewer lines yet.
I don't know about that.
Okay, you're strictly talking though.
Let's just.
I don't know how all of that ties in. I do know that my plumber came out three times, paid him every time. You know, after all the plumbing was put in, he audited it. So running the thing through.
What was he auditing?
The lawn. Thinking that I, you know, flush down something or whatever.
So the drain line or sewer line?
I guess the but what he told her is right. You could see it, you know, it's going through and going through smoothly, and then all of a sudden it's kind of a different like, and then he said, you know, you can tell that that's about where the break is, and I'm eyeballing it, but I'm going to say it's somewhere between that ditch and the street. Unless we get some cameras out there, we don't know exactly where it is.
Okay. If I'm here, right where your service line comes in and ties into where the city riser is, going down to the city main line, and there's a clean out right there. There's going to be that clean out. That's where they want.
Yeah, that's the stack. The I'm going to move on to the wastewater now.
Well, let me just say, when Eloy came out, when all this first began to be a problem afterwards, thinking it was my line, but it was Eloy came out, and I guess he said, he told me, he blew the line, and then there was a problem for a long time. So I don't know if that's why I'm thinking all of this must tie into that. You know, breaking that line, and I don't know. But anyway, okay, that's what we're
going to say. Okay. And I recall when Eloy went out and had that originally. The the issue here is that the pipe that runs down the center of the street is the city main. And all the homes there are tied to that main. And the tap that's in that all the way to the house is property of the homeowner. There are two ways that cities do this. Either the city makes the tap and installs the line to the property and charges the homeowner for that, or the city allows the homeowner to hire their plumber to do it at the best rate they can negotiate to put the tap in and install the pipe. Our system is very old, and at the time that we built the system out, that's how we did it, because one, the city didn't really have the resources to do that work, and we didn't want to get into apparently the business of billing people, which is not uncommon. The flip side of that is, while you as a homeowner are able to negotiate your best price to do that, and that includes even new home construction, and all the new homes that are built on lots today that didn't previously have a home have excavated to the center of the street and put the tap in and run that line themselves. And that is why we have the $750 road bore deposit that's put up so that they repair the street back when they do that. It's the responsibility of the person building the house, and it's then forever their responsibility to maintain that. So the tap is theirs, the stack, which is the portion that's a very sharp angle that runs up to get you up to closer to the surface. And then typically there's a clean out there, as is the case in a lot of ditch lines. And then you have the house lateral line that runs back to the property. So even the portion of the pipe that's in our right-of-way is property of the homeowner. And that is how it has always been here, and that's how we have always handled that. And every year we have people who make those repairs to that line. Whether it's behind the house or in the middle of the street. If your plumber was augering the line or cutting roots out of the line or clearing a collapse in the line, because it will do the same thing. If you have a collapse and you have mud in the line, then when they run that through, they snake it, they'll knock all that out of the way, and it will work for a while until either things get snagged in the roots again, or roots grow back, or it collapses in further. In some cases, like over in Bioforest, it collapsed till the sidewalk took a dive and then has to be repaired. If it's on our main, of course, that would affect everyone. We wouldn't have just one house. Everyone is basically at the same elevation on Baywood. We have a lot of elevated structures that you say that's different, but water will seek its own level. So if the obstruction is in our line, everyone will back up to the same amount that's upstream from that. And that was Eloy's initial observation, and that's what we do, is we pull the clean out cover, or we pull manhole covers, and we see if our line has more water in it than it's supposed to indicate that we have a problem in our line. We do jet our line. In the process of jetting our lines, sometimes that will clear an obstruction that's at the tap. If there's dirt or something that's come down and it's accumulated at the tap. Some of the old taps are really bad taps. They're not a real tap, but it is just took a hand sledge and broke a hole inside of the pipe and put the other pipe in and routed it up. And some of those are so snag prone that they'll collect stuff right at the tap and block it, and when we jet the line, it'll knock that loose and it'll free the line up again.
Do we have documentation
to that time
that
was settled?
Can you provide documentation to me so that I can see how all that was settled?
In terms of the responsibilities? Yeah, sure. Yeah, we have all that.
So are we going to check and see when the line was jetted?
Well, we have two different things here. In terms of the storm drainage, I'm going to make sure that it is jetted out and that we have any obstruction in the storm drainage. Now, that's the culverts that are running the ditch line, Baywood going back to old 146. In terms of this wastewater line, what we can do is we can TV our line. We can't TV a private line. We can't spend money on someone else's line, but we can TV our line, and we can go down and we can look at the tap from inside our pipe. And it'll do two things. One, it will conclusively say whether or not our line has failed, because I haven't seen it either. And, you know, and if our line has failed right at your tap, plus or minus, then we'll repair our line. But also, in some cases, we're able to look up into the line a little bit and be able to see if there's a problem.
So when the storm comes, we actually start to fix it. Trusting that what you're saying is the truth, and it comes to be my expense, my fix. How would y'all be able to justify, how would the city be able to justify shutting down the main line and the amount of time that it would take and solve it for all my neighbors?
Well, the main line doesn't get shut down at all. Anything that's tap or your side won't affect anybody else on the line. It won't affect the wastewater. And with the existing streets, with a new tap, it's typically excavated past the center of the street so they go straight down to the pipe. With an existing line, most plumbers will only come in a portion of the street. You know, like a 25% of the street is all. And then you go at an angle until they can intercept good pipe. They'll only go to where the break is at, typically, to avoid the expense of going all the way to the main line. But, you know, that's all based on what condition the pipe is in and what they find when they get there.
I want to speed this along somewhat, so I'm thinking we can talk about this one-on-one. What I've heard now is that we're going to jet the line or check and see if it has for the storm drain to see when it's been done as it needs to be done. The city's going to take care of the pressure by working with the engineer on that loop line, your fire hydrant. We'll TV our own line and see if it's failed. And then we have that part of Baywood on the grant to redo the drainage there.
What is wrong with seeing if there's blockage?
I want to limit the discussion here somewhat. Will our action see if there's a blockage?
Yes, that's the jetting of the culverts.
Okay. So that's the action we're going to take towards that end.
And how do we know? Because we're not just going to get frustrated.
Yeah, I think that you're looking at within the next 2 weeks for all of those things to happen, except for installation of the loop lines, depending on what the engineer specs out and how we have to accomplish that. But in terms of the ditch, jetting out any ditch obstructions and TVing the wastewater line, all that can happen within the next 2 weeks. And because we'll let you have that information, you can even look at the video.
I don't ask this question, but I still have a question, man. Your wastewater line, do you have any problems with any of the drainage, toilets or anything draining?
They bubble when I take a shower.
Oh, okay, so you have some problem.
And if you walk into my bathroom stall, the glass is
open. Okay.
You get a bad rhythm.
Having gone through this routine not too long ago, one way to do it, it costs money, is to scope that line and run a TV camera down, you know, little camera and scope it and see if it is bad. But that's going to cost you a few hundred.
Right. Although you can negotiate that cost.
Yeah, you can. And then it's going to cost you a couple thousand probably if you have to go under the road.
The problem that I have is that
that's where the problem is, but that's your responsibility according to the city code. It's my understanding, all right?
That's right.
So it's your problem all the way to the main sewer line which is under the road.
Yeah. Can y'all really justify having a homeowner take care of something that's in the
street? I understand.
We'll talk about it, I guess, eventually, but
that's, I guess, the city code on that. So.
Okay, thank you. Going to move on to the rest of the agenda. We have, do you have council meeting minutes for December 13th? Okay, any comments on them? If not, I will entertain a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. Council report. I think I'm just going to report on one of these due to time constraints. We'll discuss the next in a few weeks. Well, it was very timely that Patrick raised the issue he did about Port of Houston, because we had been meeting with the Port of Houston, and I didn't report this back until I had something concrete to report. But I think we started meeting in October. Meetings went really well. Patrick, you're absolutely correct. We have probably the best working relationship now with them that we've had in a long time. We have Michelle Hundley, Shane here tonight. Alec Dreyer's been really supportive, and Commissioner Burke is backing us up 100%. And what we've been talking about, if you can find it, mitigating the noise at the source, which would be the cranes that are lifting the containers up out of the ships onto the dock, and the reverse when they're loading the ships again. David came up with a really good idea. We actually, it was a joint effort. We had uncovered some years ago of a sound wall that was constructed in a $1 million neighborhood in California around a cogeneration facility that people said was great. It worked perfectly because when they left the door open on this wall, everybody heard everything, and they'd know they left the door open. As soon as they closed the door, it was fine. But David took this idea and developed what we're calling a sound curtain, which would absorb the noise related at the transfer point of the crane. Do you want to explain that some more?
Sure. This is the crane gantry that is a kind of typical. It's not the exact ones that we have here, but gives you the idea. This is the trolley. This is the lift and the container. It's raised up and brought over in and out of the vessel and on the vessel. Over here, in our case, it's brought down and set on the trucks that move it out, and it's picked up again by another short crane that moves them around and stacks them. But the idea is that it is the contact of this container with the next container, and it is also the sound of the hatches that are the two largest noise generators now in the handling of containers. If you exclude the ship engine noise from the equation, which is apart from that, the port has gone a long way in making the crane itself quieter, with the electric crane, in reducing the slapping of cables, in reducing backup alarms and noise in the handling. So we're down to these being the two major violators, and that is the deck hatches and the containers themselves. So the thought is, if you have a gantry that sticks out over the ship beyond the containers, is to have a curtain that drops down off the end. As this gantry moves longitudinally up and down the wharf, the curtain would move right along with it. So you have the sound-absorbing curtain in the right place all the time. And then when you're setting or lifting containers and hatches, the curtain is right there. You know, is it going to be 100% effective? No. But what we're doing is we're looking at ways that we can incrementally knock down the amount of noise. And those cranes all point right at our residential area. And so if it is effective in deadening noise that is coming back towards Shore Acres, we think that would be effective. Now, the issues came up is the weight of the curtain. Obviously, as you cantilever further out here, the gantries are rated for pretty extreme weight of lifting. lifting all the way out at the end. But if the more weight you put out here that's a static weight, you start to diminish the lifting capacity, and so there were some engineering issues and hurdles to be overcome. But in participating in the meeting, the port staff and officials were very receptive in exploring the idea, were positive, and sent that back to the manufacturer of the cranes that are there to look at what might be able to be done in retrofitting and future cranes built that way. And that's how we left it, and I'll turn that back to you for where we're at now.
So the other day, the decision was to run the concept by the manufacturer of the cranes, that manufacturer is now being used by the port. And last week I was informed that the manufacturer didn't think he could do it, didn't think it could be done. So, but the port is behind us, and everybody there, from staff to Alec Dreyer to Commissioner Burke, we're not taking no for the answer. So we're going to talk next week. I've already talked to Shane about this. If this manufacturer doesn't want the business of developing this technology that would be applicable in other areas as well as Short Acres, there's another manufacturer out there. And we're going to go to the other manufacturer. I'm going to say, okay, here's your opportunity, and if this idea won't work, give us another idea that'll work. Things are moving. They're not moving fast, they never have. But I do need to tell you, I think that this is the best working environment that we've had in ages. And I'm sure that J.O. wishes he had this working environment when he was mayor. And my feeling is, if this is going to get done, it's going to get done now during the time frame that staff is there now. Because they are backing us up. And I believe them. I don't think they're just saying yes just to say yes. So that's where we are now. We're going to meet this week or next week, probably. And I'll keep you posted. Now, I will tell you, I've been, in response to Patrick, what you said about volunteerism, they did offer the volunteerism. I wanted to see how things went with the mitigation first, before I had entered into any agreements with the volunteerism. Now that I'm convinced that their commitment is really true, is really sincere, then we're fine. Matter of fact, they have recently offered to give us a conference table for the other room, a couple of desks, chairs, gels. We're going to go down and see what can fit. So the working relationship, I'm really pleased with.